Welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast, where we dive into the environmental challenges and solutions shaping our future. Today, we are speaking with Amy Sharma, Executive Director of Science for Georgia, focusing on environmental issues and solutions impacting Georgia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Sharma. I'm the Executive Director of Science for Georgia, and I'm really excited to be here today.
We're excited to have you. So I always start podcasts off with a fun question or just something to let the people know who you are outside of the work you do, who you are as a full human being. So I wanted to ask, you know, where are you from? I know you're also a comedian. So how did that all tie? Like, where did that come from? Amy's a comedian, you guys. So where did that start? Where are you from? How does that tie? Like, yeah.
How did it all happen?
Yeah, how did it all work? How did it all happen?
All by accident. So I grew up right outside of D.C. in Northern Virginia. So that's where I grew up. Everyone in D.C. like lives and breathes the Washington Post. Like that is, I did not realize that like arguing around the dinner table about politics was like not with the rest of, like that is just what we do. Like yeah. Every night. Other people talk about like, what'd you do at school today? We're like, this. I am very upset at Mikhail Gorbachev. Like, right? That's how old I am, too. So that happened. How did the comedy happen?
Yeah.
That was by mistake.
Okay.
So I joined Science for Georgia, and we got teamed up with this professor at Georgia Tech, Lou Lefton, and he has been doing science stand-up comedy for 25-plus years.
Wow.
And he was like, wouldn't this be a great outreach event? Let's do a science stand-up comedy show as part of the Atlanta Science Festival. So I was like, sure.
So on to talking about the challenges and issues facing Georgia today, I want to talk about water pollution and access to clean water are major concerns here in Georgia. What policies or solutions should we be advocating for to protect our water sources?
Yeah, so there's a few, right?
Yeah.
So I mentioned the bad actors, right?
Uh-huh.
So number one, the EPD currently is unable to shut people down.
What is the EPD for
Sorry.
People that don't know?
Right. The Environmental Protection Division, which is like the Georgia version of the EPA,
uh-huh.
they issue all these permits.
Right.
And so if you're a repeat offender, they're like, oh, here's a $5 fine. Try not to do it again, right? It's kind of lame, right? Like they don't have real enforcement. And they also, again, those monkey guys, repeat offenders in other states, but their only thing is to look at like the permit application.
Right.
And you're just, they can't take in prior history. They can't. So that would, number one, clean up a lot, right? Because I'm sure a lot of the things happening are repeat offenders. So
yeah.
That would be one thing to take care of. The other thing is PFAS transparency.
Okay.
PFAS, for those of you not playing along at home, is the forever chemicals that are everywhere and
in
our brains. It's delightful.
Yes.
It's wonderful, but you know, the best way to get rid of them is to stop producing them. But because there's such a new health hazard that no one has really been regulating. New, I put in quotes because like everyone knew about these for 30 years. But now we're finally
taking it seriously.
Now we're finally regulating them. But transparency about like who has them? Who's using them in their manufacturing process? Are they getting out into our water? Like if you're using them in your factory, does that then go into your wastewater system?
Right.
Like, there's no transparency about where they are and where it's going. And so that would be another policy solution is PFAS transparency.
PFAS
just
transparency.
Like, where is it?
Where is
we
it?
Can't do anything about it if we don't know where it is. So like
Absolutely.
Step one. And then super consumers, like these mega factories and these data centers and stuff like that, having them take responsibility and kind of own up and again be transparent about how much power they're using, how much water they're using. If they're coming in to build this cool thing with 600 jobs, where are they getting all their water from? Right? Just like we don't know and we have no transparency. You see a running theme
Absolutely.
Here, transparency. And
yeah.
then other, like, there's boring stuff we need, right? Like, we need to fix our water infrastructure and our wastewater infrastructure. And that's not sexy at all. But, right, like, Atlanta didn't have water for, like, 2 weeks last summer, right? Like, just It's because our sewer and water system is like 150 years old.
And then our streets flood.
And then our streets flood.
During the rain.
And then we all get Ebola, right? Yeah. So like, maybe not Ebola. Yeah. Sorry. No panic, guys.
No panic.
No Ebola. But like, if you floods after every rainstorm, you're going to have higher incidences of like runoff, mm-hmm. which is bad for the rivers, but also like, what's sitting around in that water? Like, you just shouldn't
festering.
Yeah. That's a good word for it. I like it. Yeah.
Scientific.
Science.
I went to school.
Festering. So, yeah, boring stuff. We need to spend money on, like, fixing our wastewater infrastructure.
Yeah. That's a huge problem. I think that's one of the biggest things that people who come from up north to will say about Georgia. They'll say, where are the drains? Why am I walking through a river?
Why am I walking through a river every time it rains?
Savannah is very bad at that too.
Right.
River Street is a river when it rains.
Right.
Well, so, like, also, they have more water. Like, they have more, like, excuses than we do right here in Atlanta proper. But, like, that they flood a lot. Georgia has a lot of flooding zones.
They're, like, falling into the sea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have rising sea levels, not a problem in Atlanta. But the coast has the double whammy of bad infrastructure and rising sea levels.
Oof.
It's a lot.
So Georgia has made some strides in solar energy adoption. What are the biggest barriers to achieving 100% clean and renewable energy in the state, and how can we overcome them?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge to this is Georgia Power. I was trying to think of a nice way to say that, like a more,
It's the truth, right?
They make money by generating power, and they want to build more power generation facilities
everywhere,
all the time, because that's how they make money. And solar power takes that away from them, right? Because if I put solar power on my roof,
I don't need them.
I'm not paying them money anymore, right? So, like, the biggest barrier to clean energy in the state is Georgia Power. Like, there's no way around it, because it is a complete conflict with how they make money, right? So that's, like, a problem. Right. There's an economic disconnect there. And so how do we overcome that? One, vote in the PSC elections.
June 17th.
Yeah, that's, like, number one, right? We haven't elected our PSC officials since time began. And so...
So they've been there since, like, 10 years.
I don't... It was definitely, like, I think it was pre-COVID.
Far. Yeah.
Which was the before times in my head. So that would be number one, is you got to vote in your PSC. And then also just... We just got to start being loud and proud. We just got to be saying, I want this, right? Like, if everyone in Georgia stands up and is like, I want community solar, I want energy source transparency, I want this, like, sooner or later, we can't be ignored. Georgia Power can't, like, sweep us all under the rug for forever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So those are my two kind of solutions.
What can be done at the state level to address environmental justice and ensure all Georgians have access to clean air and water? That's a long one.
This is a long one.
That's a big one.
That's a pretty heavy one,
right? Yeah, we gave you a couple of heavy ones. Yeah. For the comedian, we gave you some heavy stuff.
It's
just
a lot of heavy. It's like, man, it's like late in the week.
Yeah.
So step one, bad actor legislation, hot off the presses. HB 644, introduced, like, this morning by Representative Townsend. So this is what I was talking about, like, giving EPD the right to deny permits based on past history. That is, like, a great boom, done. Like, that's a great first step.
Right.
Love it.
Absolutely.
So that's a good one right there. So that's good for environmental justice communities. And then we just need to start doing a lot of education. I know that sounds, education is like the long game and it takes forever. There's a House Resolution 100 out there, which is looking at the impacts of pollution on economic growth, which is a great way to frame this,
right?
Like, this isn't like, if legislators were going to do things about environmental justice because it was the right thing to do, they would have done it like 40 years ago. So we have to start
somewhere.
We have to start somewhere. So if we can show that, like, yeah, sure, you brought in this thing and it's bringing in jobs, but it's a polluting industry, and now all the kids in your neighborhood are getting asthma. So they have less days in school. So then when they graduate, they're not as workforce ready. Like, what are the long-term impacts of these, like, quick hit wins, right? And if we don't start showing that that is causing the state to lose money overall, they're not going to do anything about it, which sounds horribly trite and capitalism, but it's kind of the way it is, right? Yes. And so, but showing, like, and also starting to point out to them is that communities are starting to organize now, right? And so people are really connected. And so when a polluting industry is coming in, people aren't just like, oh, crap. Oh, no, right? They're like,
saying something about it.
I'm going to call this advocacy group, or this advocacy group just showed up at my church and is telling me that this is about to happen.
Right.
We're going to start organizing, right? Like, I work with Treva Gear at the Dogwood Alliance.
Yes, and she's a board member of ours.
She's amazing. Mm-hmm. And in her presentation, she's always got this great picture. She's got, like, her picketing outside City Hall, right? And she's like, why am I out here with a sign? It was because no one invited me inside to be part of the conversation. And knowing that, like, sure, you're going to announce this 20,000 monkey project, right? Economic development. Right. And your community is going to be like, what? And they're going to show up and they're going to sue. And then you're going to be in, like, 10 years of litigation, right? And maybe you'll get your, maybe you won't. I don't know what's going to, instead of that, realizing that it's actually faster and easier if you invite everybody to the table and do, like, a community benefit plan, mm-hmm, as you start talking about these economic development projects. Then they are built better. They do address concerns, and then you're not sued, right? So it's kind of a haul. It sounds like very pixie dust and unicorns, but it's also kind of like, if we start changing how we do economic development in the state, mm-hmm, we can start making sure that we're at least remediating what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. I love that. So agriculture is a huge part of Georgia's economy, mm-hmm, but it also contributes to environmental degradation.
Mm-hmm.
What are some science-backed solutions for making Georgia's agriculture more sustainable?
Yeah. Ooh.
I love this one.
I like this question too. I read it. Yeah. I was like, thanks, guys.
That's a good one. Yeah.
This is a good one. So there are, like, a gazillion ways to do sustainable agriculture. Right. The great news is the UGA Ag Extension actually offers training and classes and help to farmers if they want to do more sustainable. So it's out there in a known quantity. And I love that it's coming from UGA because, like, we're Georgia.
Right.
Go Dogs, right? Like, if UGA says it's a good idea, it actually gets a little bit more.
Right.
Go Gamecocks. Anyways, so, but anyways, I had to get that in there.
Yeah, I know.
But that's good. And so the two biggest things that they can do is go to low-till or no-till farming, because mm-hmm, that really reduces your runoff, and that really helps the soil not degrade as quickly. And then the other thing is instead of using fertilizer, you need to use compost, because fertilizer is just like a quick hit, but you have to do it every year, right, and it actually, like, ruins the soil over time. Whereas if you use composting, it, like,
replenishes
the soil. Yeah. It turns the soil, like, soil is a living thing, if you think about it. And it turns the soil back into a living thing that holds more water and holds more nutrients. Right. And, like, it's nature's way of making the soil better, right? So, like, crop rotation, there's plenty of things that we know. What's missing in all of this is that to transition from a normal farm to a regenerative farm takes 3 to 5 years.
Mm.
And so at the end of that 5 years, you're making more money than you did as a traditional farm. Like, plenty of studies. But no farmer
wants to take the time. Yeah.
I don't have a 5-year savings. Like, I can't not make money for 5 years. No one cannot make money for 5 years, right?
Right.
So, like, to transition is going to require investment in terms of, like, equipment, grants, like, because they need different equipment, mm-hmm, right? And then also just, like, straight up, like, something to tide them over as they switch from one way to another.
Right.
And then they become more profitable and they actually spend less money on equipment and supplies and all this stuff. But like, that's a transition period. And if I was a farmer, I don't know if I would be able to do it.
I would probably say no. I mean, initially from the, if I was a farmer, not as an environmentalist, but just thinking about a farmer who maybe you have a family, mouse to feed, like all the things, maybe you're not as wealthy of a farmer, but you have this opportunity to make a little more money and not have to feel like you're trying to keep up your farm, but you can do this regenerative farming, but it's going to take you 3 years. So it's like you're waiting. You know, you're waiting on your ship to come in.
Right.
I feel like that kind of process is hard. Unless you have 500 acres, you could just be like, okay, those over there, we're going to regenerate that. And then I'll keep this here and then we'll switch off.
And that's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And yeah, so I mean, I kind of like, if you're like a brand new farmer, just
a good way
then you can maybe go straight into it.
Right.
But switching people over is going to require time and investment.
Advocacy.
Like all those
education
things.
Around it and
and just like, and it's also gonna, you know, I mean, the great way to do is do pilot programs, right? Because farmers talk to each other, so they're like, I did this thing through UGA and look how great it was.
Grants, etc.
You need the grants. It's gonna take a lot of money
because it takes to sustain it and be able to, like, this is a business. Businesses are, I gotta make money.
So, and also, I mean, it also would be okay because then, you also need to stagger the transition because we all still need to keep eating.
Yeah, the food devastation would be pretty bad if everybody was just like, okay, we're gonna shut down for just a tad. Just 3 years.
It'll be fine.
You guys will figure it out and we'll be fine.
We'll just eat Soylent Green in the meantime. It'll be fine.
Grow your own tomatoes. I'll show you how.
Yeah, so science definitely knows exactly what to do, but now we need people to step up with a lot of money, so that's
those billionaires. So philanthropy needs,
we need some
need philanthropy in the farming communities.
Yeah,
please.
So
on to legislative action. So what key environmental policies should Georgians be paying attention to right now, and how can they get involved in advocating for science-based legislation?
Love it.
Yes.
Yeah. So first up, Senate Bill 34.
Uh-huh.
Senate Bill 34 would make data centers pay for the infrastructure that they need. So currently right now, the way it's set up is that if Georgia Power has to build more supply, we're all going to have to pay for it, even though none of us is going to use it.
Right.
So it's a very fair bill. It's basically like, you're the only ones that need us to build a new power plant, so pay for it, right? And if we don't have this bill, they will not.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would, capitalism, we're back, right? Like, why pay for something if you don't have to? So we need to do that to like save our power bills. Second one, HB 611, which is the PFAS Transparency Act. This is a great one. Super simple.
Yeah, you talked about it.
Yeah, great. So these are two. I would call these like two big hits. Both of them could really use some phone calls to your congressman about both of them, because they're rather good. They're rather popular. To get them out of rules would be good to have every senator and every representative going to the people on rules and being like, I just got another phone call about Senate Bill 34.
As cities in Georgia continue to grow, how can urban planning incorporate sustainability to protect green spaces, reduce emissions, and improve public health?
All right. So a few things come to mind. I am not a public planner.
Right.
I don't even play one on TV. But a few things. So green spaces increase public health and they like decrease urban heat islands. So these are things that as you're looking for neighborhood planning, you need to preserve the green spaces. You need to make sure there's adequate tree cover. All of these, especially as our summers start getting hotter, we're definitely going to need more tree cover and more green spaces because both of those things cool things down. They improve mental health, they improve air quality. All these are good things. Like, all of them are good things. Another thing we were talking about, boring infrastructure stuff, you can use green spaces and like and this, you've almost reached the wall of my knowledge, but there are ways to design like water runoff and water catchment areas mm-hmm. that are also then green spaces that are pretty attractive and quite nice. So those are also good things that we should be asked. Like city planners can put all the boring functional things into things that are basically green spaces. So they should be looking at creative ways to do that. And then also another thing is, you know, like on an unused lot, let's put a community garden there, right? Community gardens, again, green spaces. They increase community connectivity, which is... Playing in the dirt is also very good for your mental health. Mm. It is. Like, gardening is, like, very, apparently,
like gardening.
Very...
It's like very, like, good... Dirt. I got a different image. Like, playing in the dirt. Like, just, I'm just out there playing in the dirt. Gardening.
You can also play in the dirt. You can do that, too. I'm not stopping you.
I like playing in the sand.
Yeah, that sounds better.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
But to all the gardeners out there, I respect playing in the dirt.
Right. They would say they're not playing. They probably are intentionally using the dirt to do things, which is not me.
I play in the dirt.
I can't even grow tomatoes. I'm like so bad.
I killed, what is the thing? It's the cacti things? No.
You killed one of those?
They're called something.
Succulents.
I killed a succulent. I promise I didn't mean to. I don't know what I don't know. I don't understand what, maybe I left it in the sun. I wasn't supposed to do that or something, or didn't remember to water it. But they were like, that's the easiest plant to have. And if you kill a succulent, you really just don't belong out in the wild. And
I've killed multiple succulents. So okay. I'm with you. Like when the apocalypse comes, we are screwed.
We're done.
We're done.
Jesus, just take me. Just go ahead and take me. I kill succulents. There's no way I can grow a tomato.
Maybe I can offer something else to the community that grows up after the apocalypse, but it's certainly not going to be food. Nope. I'm out. Just no. But community gardens. They are actually really good for public health. Yeah. Again, right? Like, and it's anything you can do to increase community connectivity is good for socialization.
A sense of belonging, a natural fresh food source, and
right, it teaches kids where fruits and vegetables come from, makes them want to eat more fruits and vegetables, right. Always good. Also, going outside and talking to your neighbor, maybe we won't be as crazy and hate each other all the time. I don't know, so that could probably be good too.
Connectivity.
Yeah.
So speaking of community and talking to others, there is a lot of misinformation surrounding climate change and environmental science. How does Science for Georgia work to combat this and make science more accessible to the public?
All right, we just held a Science for Georgia event,
yes.
Georgia Science Junction, where you go in a bar and you learn something new about misinformation. Mm-hmm. So it was like this presentation. We did like role playing. Some of the most important things. These misinformation, they're like sticky. It's simple to understand. It uses like a couple true words. And so you're like, oh, that must be right. And it's way easier to understand the misinformation than it is to understand the
misinformation. Yeah.
Right. So, but that's just because scientists suck at communication.
It's on us to make it digestible. Yeah.
So we do a lot around like, how do we make this digestible? How do we get, we have to make our truth sticky and digestible and believable and quick. It's just got to be quick.
Bill
Nye setting the globe on fire with that actually was quick, right? Like sending that to people. This is what's actually happening.
Right.
So that's one. And then the other thing is just to get outside of our tent, right? Because we're currently just like, I don't know, everybody I know believes in climate change. I don't hang out with a lot of climate change deniers. So how... They are out there in the wild. There's a lot of them.
I've met a few too.
Argue
down and say, now, this is not a ploy from the government. Like, you know, like, the weirdest things come up.
It's
a plot that the government has thrown on us. Like, they have weather control machines. You know, it goes deep.
It goes really deep. And so, but, you know, and you're like, what do I do? And, you know, and we can later get together and joke about it because we need to. But in the moment, like picking on that person is not,
is
like,
not helpful.
How is that starting? Right. So really sitting down and thinking about how you could be intentional when talking to somebody who does not agree with you at all.
Like, and build the bridge.
Build that bridge. Yeah. How do I keep asking questions until I understand really, right? Because if you think about it, like, and I'm going to use vaccines as an example. No one wakes up in the morning and is like, you know what I want to do?
Get a vaccine.
Well, they don't want to get a vaccine, but also they don't want to start.
Cut it up.
Because they're like, they're painful, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get a shot. I want to get a shot.
But you know what? I'm going to wake up this morning. I'm going to create a public health crisis by not, right? No one stands up and is like, I'm not getting my vaccines because screw you, right? Like, that's not their.
Yeah.
So they are making a conscious choice that they think is the right choice for them and their kids, right?
Based off the information that they've been given.
Yeah. Right. And you can't make fun of them for that. You have to be like, all right, cool. Why do you believe that? Why do you believe this? Why is this, you know, and keep asking those questions and keeping the conversation positive, right? Like, the first thing is like Michael held this workshop for us, and their first thing was, when someone tells you something that you just don't disagree with, how do you say something positive in response? Like, when someone's like, I'm not going to vaccinate myself. Like, you can't just be like, oh my God, you're an idiot, right? You have to be like, I'm glad that you care about your health so deeply that you've taken the time to think about this.
Yeah.
Right? That is a compliment.
How do we get to that conclusion?
How did that come to be?
I'm interested to know.
Yeah, like, I really want to understand, because obviously you care about what you put in your body.
Right.
Which, all these are positive things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, but like, man, that's hard. In the heat of the moment, when someone's like telling you that, and you're just like, dude, right? Yeah. So really, and kind of, you know, it's on us then to be intentional and kind of think about, well, if someone does tell me this, how can I flip that around and say something positive in response to them, and then start talking to them, and then keep talking to them. And that is a lot.
Yeah.
So it's both of those things. It's the making your truth sticky, but then also welcoming other people to the tent.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been a beautiful conversation, worms, monkeys, data centers, and the like. So thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.